What did you do for recreation in the 40s and 50, early 50s as compared to later on after the population increased in the area?
Well, as you might guess,
I didn't have a great deal of time for recreation. It was all work, work, work. We loved music, and any time we could get, we'd listen to the music. I know my husband would sometimes be up. I think that the ABC would put forth classical music at 10 o'clock then, which is very late when we're tired, and he'd say, come and listen to the music. So quite often I'd want to and be just too exhausted to do this, but he would sit and listen to the music. And in the guest house days, of course, there were dances every night in the hall, and there were the tennis courts, but you didn't get to play on them. And I know my husband would be out at 12 o'clock at night after work rolling, watering the courts to roll next day. It was a lot of hard work. I didn't socialise. I knew the folk in Penrith, but they had quite a good social life going. There were all the usual things, the Rotary and the Inner Wheel and the CWAs, and I didn't have time for those things. We were great readers. We'd often read together, but it'd be at night usually, so it wouldn't be for long.
You were a painter too, or?
Well, I didn't do much of that then. I did start up again at the end of the 50s and go in and do a little bit of sculpture and before that screen printing at the evening schools that started up then, Penrith High. That's the end of the 50s and the beginning of the 60s. But illnesses, I'd had a sister, my only sister died of cancer, and that was the end of my family. My brother had died about 5 years before, so I had a lot of deaths, births and deaths to contend with. And I had become a member of the Historical Society, I don't know whether it was the end of the 40s or the beginning of the 50s, and because one of the members had drive me in. But I don't know now, thinking back, how I even managed that. I had to drop out then with the illnesses, but then I took it up again in the beginning of the 70s. I did some courses up in Sydney after my husband died, and I'd go up at night, and I also went out to work. I still had cattle here and fixing fences and so forth, I didn't have anybody. We gave up having people when my husband was ill, because he'd applied to the public service, and he was going into the pack to work and live privately. We realised we couldn't take the stress of other people's, you're becoming a welfare.
Yeah.
You need a welfare officer, actually. There's a great deal of stories in there, I suppose.
And you went out to work too, did you?
I would work part-time, yes. I'd work
what sort
part-time.
Of work did you do?
Well, when I say part-time, I'd work with the statistician and census, the three monthly surveys. Mind you, I let my husband know I was going to do this because the job came up while he was with his illness, you see, and he always used to be a stickler for people's privacy, you see. But I suppose, you know, you can't always do the things you believe in. And that fitted in with not neglecting my children, you know, that I could, it would come up every 3 months and they all learned learned to get their breakfast and cook a very good omelette and took pride in it and could look after themselves, iron their clothes. When they went to high school, the boys always ironed their clothes. We had an Irish woman staying here, little battling Irish woman, and she had, I think, 5 sons, and she'd be ironing 17 shirts. And I thought, not for me, never for me. They had drip dryers and everything going to high school. But now, you see, they look after themselves, and my son here, he doesn't let his wife press his pants. He irons, he's a real sharing. He takes his turn with putting the children to bed. And I think, well, it's not so hard for them because they were used to looking after themselves as children.
Did they go to high school in Penrith?
Two of them went to Penrith High School, mm-hmm. and the other two to Nepean it started up.
Mm-hmm. Did they catch the bus or?
No, they walked. They rode bikes into Penrith,
mm-hmm.
but they just. Well, they did have bikes, as a matter of fact. The last two, for a period, they had a tandem they'd both ride up on the frame of it. It's still out there, which excited the attention of the owners, of course. They feel rather good about it.
And what about your grandchildren now? Do they go to school? Are they not old enough?
Oh, no. The others next door... Ian's 13, he goes to St Dominic's.
How do they get there now?
By a bus, he picks a bus up, and the other two of the family go up here to, I'm having a blank out now.
the times local have changed from riding a bike to catching the bus. That's
yes, well, they used to walk, of course, to primary school, walk across to primary school.
No worries about traffic or being abducted?
No. Well, there's always the odd one at any time, I think, that could be around the lanes. I remember my mother warning us. We were 4 miles away from our school and we usually went in by sulky, but sometimes, I don't know, something, the horse perhaps was being shod all over it, or something, we wouldn't have the sulky and we'd have to walk.
This was in Victoria?
No, I was born in Victoria, but I grew up in the Riverina. It was only because my mother's mother lived in Ballarat and that's the area they'd grown up. My parents. She was saying to us, you know, never take lollies from a stranger. These are those days, those safer days. It seems so much safer then. And don't accept a ride. And one day the minister asked us if we'd like a ride in his car. And we said, no, thank you very much. My sister and I, and of course he told my mother that we'd said this, and all very embarrassing, but that's the way you see, there's always been
that element,
an element somewhere or other. But I remember one day when the Air Force was up there and it had the savage dogs, the train to kill Alsatians up there, the guard dogs, and one escaped. And the whole school was warned, don't let your children walk home, beware, you know, keep them indoors, because they thought it was heading back to its previous owner, previous Air Force base in Sydney somewhere, and it would kill one side, you see, because that had been trained. So we kept the children in those days, but that was just a rare occasion, yes, and the dog got safely back, headed back. But
I think we've just about covered everything now.
I was just going to mention the clinics for the babies. I think I saw it there somewhere that there was a clinic sister in the clinic, and you could take your young baby in and be have it weighed and see how it was gaining and get advice. I don't know when they died out, but you'll know that. But of course, as more babies you got, the less need there was for the clinics. Yeah. But way.
Did you? Can I just ask you too? Did you plan to have your four children, or were they? Did they just happen?
Well, there was about 3 to 4 years apart. These boys. I know the eldest one had once said, "Oh, do babies come every 4 years?" You see, this is this interval. But no, I've got to be honest and say we didn't plan. I planned the first one very much because you kind of felt the odds were against you then, you know. And I felt I wanted at least a baby, something of my husband. You got to that odds on bit. But I've loved them very much. I didn't have a girl, but by the fourth one I said I had a group four that could play each other. But of course the courts are gone now that were there.
And you didn't have much help with the children, bringing up the children in one sense, although there were always people around, so...
Yes, there was a grandmother here until 1950, but that was only for the two younger ones. It's difficult. It's hard to know how you did manage, really. I think it was by the time I had the young one, I could stop and cuddle him whenever I liked. But you couldn't always do that with the others when you had guests around, yes. But I enjoyed my children, and actually when the last one left high school, was with some regret. And I always enjoyed school holidays. They were lovely.
What did you do in the school holidays? You were still here, I suppose.
Yes. We didn't have many. I think we had a break of 4 days camping down at the East Beach near Kiama before the Christmas rush. And the wind came and blew the tent down, and one of the babies was frightened of the sea, and it was a bit of a disaster. And I did have a few breaks later on, and I'd go and stay with my sister, but we both couldn't get away together.
No, we
didn't have many holidays then, but the parents had... They always closed in July, the guest house, when they were in the guest house. And they took trips to New Zealand, where my father-in-law had come from. And they'd have another break before Christmas. But there was a lot of work, a lot of painting went on. He all had some of the guests had come up as friends and help him paint the place. And... then they'd go off on their trip. But they had some nice trips. And they got that way. They'd have one day a week off and they'd catch the 10 o'clock train, and the staff at... They had an old retainer here, and he always had these dainty sandwiches ready for them when they got back at night, I think, off a late train. That was their day off. But...
And did your daily routine would have been cooking and doing the housework and
Well, at first they'd wash. They had an old copper over in the old building there, which predates this building, which was built in the 1850s. And that lovely old stone building was a wash house with the two troughs and the copper. And I had to boil up my nappies and all that way, and all the sheets were done that way until after the war, I think about 48, a fellow came around and collected the sheets and took them to Parramatta Laundry. And all that, there was a big, you know, those old-fashioned rollers. Mm-hmm. They'd take the sheets off the line and put them through the rollers. And he did a wonderful job ironing the sheets and pillowcases and towels.
My grandmother used to have one of those.
Yes. Well, I think they'd pay a woman to come and wash once a week and for the linen.
But and so what did your husband mostly do around?
Well, he used to do the tennis courts, the lawns. He would help if they needed in the heavy times, they needed a fourth waiter. He would wait in the kitchen.
So
he would help. Well, this is while they had the parents and the other son.
Mm-hmm.
And he would he would be the entertainer at night, and he would saddle up the horses and milk the cows and everything. I'm not sure. He was a great reader. He loved his Latin and French actually, and he'd read in French and Latin. He loved words and I think the Latin also brought in the interest of the words, and that was more his relaxation, I suppose. And it was a matter of the depression that they came here, that the family had lost their home and business in Sydney, and they started up, and it was a case of doing what you did. And strangely enough, I read the other day that the guest houses had gone out because of the depression. And that wasn't so.
No.
It was rather the reverse, strangely enough. And there were people in Sydney who'd bring the same people would come every year for school holidays.
Mm.
There were always some people better off.
Yes.
And others who were just getting wages came down for the holiday weekends, and the trains were used. There was the great rush to get on the trains for the holiday weekend. Well, I don't think they have that problem now very much, unless it's going down to the snow, but I think mostly people drive down to the snow.
So looking back over the period before the big changes took place here, before the war and during the war, to now, or to say in the late 50s, what do you think the changes have meant to you? I mean, you have really said that it was, that you don't think it was for the best, that you liked the way it was.
Yes. Well, it was beautiful, you see. And
yes.
But of course, there were people who were quite beauty with being very unpractical.
Mm.
But just the same, I would say, they had promised. I was in the army during the war.
Oh,
yes. And a lot of the kits were coming around showing how to build better cities, the green belts, and showing the greater London with green belts.
Mm-hmm.
And what could happen in Australia, and how we had this all this land, and how we should use it properly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, instead of doing that, it's been a great subdividers push, I think, you know, the so-called developers just get in, and whatever government it is, they just pressure them to do what they want. And the idea of taking all the best, they've got the best land over there for factories now. Well, I don't think call that good planning. I don't think there has been good planning.
Lack of planning.
There has been, you know, some of the areas where you couldn't grow anything, like Cranbrook and Orchard Hills is another beautiful area that should not even been given over to
the
small farm, 5-acre farms, because they, it's a particularly good soil there, so happens, volcanic, not a very common spot really, and it grew beautiful grapes and beautiful orchards, hence its name, and really, is there anything like it around Sydney? No, as far as tourist things, they shouldn't put, they're putting housing commissions on one side, and of course other buildings.
At Orchard Hills.
At Orchard Hills. And that's a lovely area that should be kept. Why plain ugliness? You know, I feel...
Is that how you see it now, as ugly?
Well, of course, there's always the mountains and the river, even if it is so deadly polluted. I think a lot of it is not thought out. I used to look across to those beautiful gums over there, and they were as big as they are now, and whereas now they've put a petrol station underneath and a hotel, and I thought, they are so lovely, no, there's no need to raise any cry. People will leave them. They will leave them because they're so lovely. And you know, they're the gums that were... the second gum in Australia that was given a name, those gums.
Which, what name is that?
Territicornis, yes. It's a open forest gum that loves its feet to be in swampy areas some of the time. But I was up the other day at Glenbrook, and that has a lovely park there with lovely gums, not the same type of gum but a different one, and the tourists, a couple of tourists got out to go to the tourist bureau, and one stayed and was taking photographs of all the gums, and I thought, there are these beautiful gums over there being ruined by petrol fumes and digging up around their roots, which they can't stand, whereas they should have had a lovely back and left it there, something of the original trees. There are no original trees otherwise here in the area. I think there are lots of things that should be important, like some of the old Castlereagh on the left hand side there, those beautiful homes there. I mean, they don't, I know we are very short of cobbles in Australia for building, but I don't think they have to take the lot. Out. I think they should leave some of our roots, one of Macquarie's plannings. When you see how far sighted some of the earlier people are, some of the government at the time was saying emu planes should never be taken out of government ownership, you see, then. Not that that necessarily saves an area, no. Depends on the government, doesn't it? But I do feel very passionately about the destruction of things, the destruction of the old buildings, the old house that was on the hill above where the shopping centre is, was built by convict labour, was the superintendent's cottage, and the Governor Macquarie had rooms set aside there so that when he travelled through up to Bathurst, if he wanted to stay overnight, there was somewhere to stay. I don't know that he ever did stay there, but it was, that's why it was called a government house. Now that was...
Has that been demolished?
It's been demolished, yes. In the 70s it was demolished. And two beautiful bunya trees on either flanked each side. I was told that they can live to 1,000 years, and well, they could have been planted at the same time, you know, and then they had this lovely drive coming down the hill to the Western Highway. It would have been a beautiful place. The Historical Society wanted to save it and have it as a headquarters. People would come in and ask, was this for sale? And I'd say no, but that place, it had 40 acres of oranges around it, and maybe that was too much for them. But then a gentleman who had very little feeling for Australia at all, and a lot of them feel, oh, that's not old, and we've got things 500 years or something. Mm. And he let it go, just deteriorate, and vandals, so-called vandals, well, vandals come in, but that's the way they go about things. And the cedar doors were taken, the cedar staircases were taken. Squatters would get in and light campfires in the middle of the floor and write all over the walls. Well, then he could get it demolished. And these convict bricks came out of it. The beautiful underground cellar, which they filled in and built a house on top of.
So as well as it being a part of history that's disappeared, I suppose, for the people like you who've lived in the area, they're familiar landmarks that have gone.
Yes, well, I could stand in the corner of this place and look across and see those trees. Mm. And it really looked like a botanical gardens looking across there. In the spring, you'd see the fingers of white blossoms of the apricot trees and all these lovely trees. There were more bunya trees. You know the bunya?
Not really.
There's one up in Lewis Gallery, a young one. I suppose it's only about 30 years. And it came from Queensland, from Bunya Mountains. The Aborigines loved the big seeds like that come out of a cone. It's got a cone, big cone. Cunningham went up when he was surveying the land, and it's called, Bidwilly, it's one of the Araucarias. And like the Norfolk Island pine, related to Norfolk Island pine, the hoop pine. You could see them from here. And from the hill that it was set on, you could see all around Dimmu Plains as they ran, look around. But historically, it was something that was so valuable to Penrith and shouldn't have gone. Well, there are other places like that that have gone, unfortunately. When you see how interesting Goulburn is with all its old buildings, I mean, there have been some demolished. But there's a wealth still there, and such an interest it is to go up to Goulburn, and Penrith could have been the same. Mm. Well, much the same.
The only thing that I haven't really asked you about was finances, and it probably is different for you having lived in a guest house, but I was going to ask you, who was in charge of doing the accounts? Was that you or your husband? Or the household accounts and the business accounts?
Actually, he was a very good mathematician, and he used to do the accounts. When it came to paying the bills, I think I would have to see that the bills were paid. And when it was the bookings, when I had the beige, a sister of mine came up for a while. She had two children, was on her own then. While the third one was coming, she did all the bookings and a lot is meeting the guests when they come and showing them to their rooms, and generally being charming to them, you know, with a good will of it, and seeing them off again. By that time they were old friends and so forth. It was very pleasant relationships then. But as I say, interesting as it may have been later, it was more problems.
Yeah.
Problems of people you take on. Finance, you were asking about. You mean banking?
Yes. Did you bank locally? Or?
Yes, there were banks in Penrith. Nothing in Dimmu Plains, so the banking was done Nimue Plains, the National Bank started up, and I think we went to the National Bank there, and I think first of all was Bank of New South Wales.
And
there.
did you use credit with your shopping for provisions and that sort of thing? Or did
I think there were monthly accounts then, yes. My husband wasn't one for credit because he'd seen an aunt through the Depression and lose all the refrigerators and so forth, and he didn't like it very much at all. But I remember talking him into buying a big dishwashing machine. I've still got the big thing out there. It's a commercial dishwashing machine on credit, and he very reluctantly gave in, and it was a wonderful thing. You know, no longer did you have to have people washing up for their lives over a hot steamy sink. That the waitresses just come out and scrape the plates and in they'd go.
But it did cut
down on work, yes. But mostly it was monthly accounts.
Right.
Of course, I grew up in an area where it was after harvest. It was annual accounts.
We've just about run out of tape now, so I think we might call it a day.
Yes, all right.
If you think of anything later. Thank you very much. It's been very interesting.
I don't know. I've gone all over with Brown's cow, not Brown.